Okay, let's begin. Let's begin on the shoe where it says Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Yud Zayin Amud Aleph Shechet Sheshochat B'Loi Kabbalah. There is a tradition that you are not allowed to shacht unless you have a document. You've been tested. You have studied the laws of Shulchan Aruch and Yerdeya and studied the Sefer Simla Chadasha.
The Kabbalah is more than that. Kabbalah is you have to practice.
Practice it. Shimush.
Yeah.
You have to have shimush. There is a set. You have to have you have to have a ksav Kabbalah from a dayan, from a poysik, from a bezdin that you.
A shaykhid.
A shaykhid.
No, you have to have Kabbalah from another shaykhid.
Another shaykhid. One who himself has Kabbalah. Right. Or Kabbalah.
So then you require the time. You had to have union membership.
Union membership. Okay.
One time was. They used to have two separate unions, one for chickens and one for cattle.
The whole different beast. It's a whole different skill to shacht animals against shachting chickens. Yeah, what you were saying?
Yes.
You're not going to get Kabbalah unless you have internship.
Is there a term? I don't know.
Internship. Internship. You have to practice. You have to be.
You have to practice under supervision. The question.
Absolutely.
How long?
I don't know how long.
Depends who the guys did it.
Who gives Kabbalah today for Shechita? You have to go.
Chabad.
But what about not Shechita? Let's see. Chassidish Shechita. Chassidish Shechita. Who's who? Your wife shaves her hair.
The knife.
And his wife shaves her hair.
They didn't actually mention that, but they probably would kill you if you didn't. So.
I was at Empire. I went to Empire, and we visited by Reisman many years ago on Chol HaMoed, Sukkot or Pesach. I don't remember what it was. We went 6 o'clock in the morning on a bus. It was 4 hours to Pennsylvania to Empire, and they're doing a shechita. It's very, very impressive. They really come out. It's a PR opportunity for them, and they come out and they show you, give you a tour of the facility. And one of the people on the tour asked, "What's this Empire?" We saw the packaging. Everything goes into Empire. On all the packaging, the wrapping. What's the difference between Empire and what they call Chassidus Shechita? Because this facility is used not only by Empire,
right.
It's used by all of many different. Chassidish shchid, private shchidus.
Plants are used for various shchidus.
All right, all different shchidus.
You just bring your mashgiach, your knives.
Your mashgiach knives, your shaykhdim. So they said everything is basically the same. The same shaykhdim, they're all the same. The pool of shaykhdim are all the same. It's just that maybe a couple of them, their wives don't shave their hair entirely. So those shaykhdim are not eligible to work on the days when those organizations or those businesses take over the slaughterhouse. Everything's the same. Every single thing you see here is exactly the same. We have 50 sheikhtim who live in the community. There are 50 sheikhtim. 45 of them, their wives shave their hair. 5 of them don't. So on the day, we work out the schedule that when this specific company, they do and they advertise Chassidus Shechita, so those 5 sheikhtim, that's not their day off. That's their day off.
What is the wife shaving their hair?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you don't have to be married to be a sheikhit.
Is there a din that she has to shave?
No, these are minhagim. These are nothing. That's nothing to do. It's just it's money, it's business.
From your Shemayim. What you're saying is 100% right for one simple reason. We had a problem once with somebody who didn't want to take one shechita out in California, and they asked us for the name of the show at that particular facility in New Jersey, and we gave them a list of the names, and they told us back if we could certify, they'll take our meat if we certify that the animals that we're shipping them came from this particular shayfit in this group of people, they'll take him.
Because he has certain customs.
I signed a paper that he did that these 5-6 animals were done by him, they'll accept.
They used to have a lot of Israelis.
Is there a code in the packaging to see who the shayfit is?
Everything
is computerized.
Yom Dalit, 8:30 by. Every animal, every piece of meat is marked with a tag, with a plate. Monday.
Does it have the Shaykh's name?
Yeah, they a lot of companies will.
They do. They'll know who the Shaykh is.
Yeah, let them.
Wow.
Everything.
They lock up certain animals. We get in stuff, let's say, for certainly if it was that kind of shit stuff from certain people from Williamsburg, and they would mark off, we get a call and say, animals 1, 3, 7, 8, 9, and 10 are the ones that you want. The rest you put in a separate truck. It's all glad kosher, but these numbered animals are really glad.
Okay, let's go. Let's learn what it says here. Shaykhay Cheshachad Balik Balik Habala. Kosav Ramah. Okay, let's go through this. Kosav Ramah. Hashaykhayd Atzmo Lo Yishchayt. The Shaykhayd himself Shnach Shchita Avbi Shadea Hilcha Shchita Vuhu Mumche Ad Cheshachad Gimel Pamim Bifnei Chacham Mumche Hilcha Shchita. A shoychid is not allowed to slaughter until he does three shchitos in the presence of a superior and who observes him and testifies and acknowledges that he knows what he's doing. One of the main concerns is not to faint. When you slaughter, especially an animal, there's an enormous amount of blood. The slaughterhouses where they shecht animals is just puddles of blood. It's not for the faint of heart. Even when you shecht birds, it's not for everyone to see how they mass slaughter of birds. And turkeys is very frightening to watch. Turkeys, they after you do the shechita on the turkeys shake violently. So it says over here that the person that you have to acknowledge that the person did a shechita all the way through. It's a cold blooded person, the shechit, in order to shecht it all the way through and he should not faint. So the Ramah says that we have a tradition: you are not allowed to do shechita unless you have a kabbalah, you have a document from another shechit that says you have been tested on the halachos and you have also done shimush. You also have real experience in the field. We know that you know what you're doing is correct. What happens if we have here what's a renegade? Guy goes, opens up a shop, he starts doing shechita, and he does not have Kabbalah. Imutu lechol mishchitas. He seems like a fine, erelicha person. He knows the halachas, he knows what he's doing, but no one ever gave him Kabbalah. Are you allowed to eat from his meat? Simla chadasha is the sefer. This is the book, this is the textbook, this is the sefer that you have to, shechit has to know in his sleep. This is the sefer hilcha shechita. Kosav sheshechita soy asura, it is osur. She'im lo yikein ma ha'ilu chacham b'takonasim. If you're going to let renegades get up and do whatever they want, then what's the purpose of this requirement of having a kabbalah? Shehalei kol shechid yishchad b'le kabbalah v'diyevad yehimutin lo'achlo m'shechita soy. For the bottom line is, it's not kosher for eat consumption unless there is kabbalah. Kach kosav gam b'sefer b'eslach m'yehuda. Shebedereinu shekol go'inu oilam tiknu al p'yedin v'kimu b'kibu aleyem. This has been widely accepted. It's not kosher if the sheikhit does not have Kabbalah. He's a expert. He's a surgeon. There's no one like him. No one has a hand like this person. He is the world-renowned surgeon. He's done. He's saved the lives of all the biggest celebrities. It doesn't matter. What does the Gemara say? Ein dvarim elu poislim es haget. Hare sheyesham takonos she'einam psulim b'divya. There are certain things that I get certain things that I don't remember, but there are certain times that I get have to be done l'chatchila. And if you don't do it, it's still kosher. One of the reasons is because meshumi guna hikilu barabanan. If you're going to disqualify every single get because you did not have enough all the bells and whistles of every single get, then women are not going to be able to remarry, and you're going to have a problem of a gunos meshumi gunos hikilu barabanan. Therefore, they will makel. So say that when it comes to shchita.
Yeah, but why do you apply that?
Because shchita, maybe it's half of mammon, maybe it's a loss of money, and also you don't have what to eat. People need to eat again. You don't want to play on people's health. If you don't have good nutrition, it can daily lay sakon. That's the machloikis. That appears to be the machloikis.
You can have a cut with vitadil, no?
So we don't attribute. We don't. First of all, that's time of the Gemara. The Kabbalah is a later enactment. It's something probably in the 15th, 16th century. It's a much later enactment. The Gemara in Achanam, in the time of the Gemara, you did not need Kabbalah. Every person did shchita in their backyard. You have an animal. You go to the backyard. You do shchita. You're done. You're finished. Later on, when things got out of hand, then it became a new enactment. We're dealing with at least 500 years since the time of the Gemara when they started this takana that you have to have Kabbalah. Now, let's go further. So the bottom line is, like everything else, it's a machlokes. It's a machlokes. If you have a renegade, he does shchita. He has no Kabbalah. Are you allowed to eat from the meat? Let's say you find yourself stranded on an island. That's a different case. That's Chayra Shah. But you find yourself in a difficult situation and it's the only thing you can eat is you know the person knows what he's doing. Is it kosher or not? It's machlokes if you're allowed to eat from the meat. I just want to make mention that another interesting, very similar topic is a Kabbalah to be a sofer. This used to be more of an issue years ago. Today it's not accepted. But you, Me'ikar Hadin, you do not need a Kabbalah to write tefillin, to write a Sefer Torah, to write mezuzos. Anyone that opens up the Shulchan Aruch and you learn the halacha, Simul Lamed Beis, Simul Lamed Vav, and you learn maybe a little Yerodeya, you learn Kesa Sefer, you have everything you need to know to be a Sefer. And then you have some practice, you have some Shemush, you go to a Sefer, you learn the letters, you learn. Can you write a Sefer Torah, tefillin, mezuzos, which you can make a bracha, you can make a mitzvah, and you can sell it without receiving smicha, Kabbalah, that you know the halachas? So there is no such thing until probably the last 50 years, where you need Kabbalah. Anyone who they want can hang up a shingle, I'm a sofer mumcha, I'll write for you a mezuzah, tefillin, mezuzos. That's the way it was. Sofer stam, you don't need Kabbalah. In the last, I would say, 50 years, it became very popular that it's unacceptable for a person to hang up a shingle and be a sofer, to write tefillin, mezuzos, and certainly to be a magia if you don't have Kabbalah. And who gives Kabbalah? Kabbalah today has been dominated by the Vaad Mishmeres Stam. Maybe there's another organization also, I don't remember all the details. They basically have a monopoly on Kabbalah. You go to them and you take a bechina, they have exams, they give, I think, even once a month. I don't remember all the different times. They have a curriculum and you take the exams. You take the exams and they give you, you get a grade and you get from them Ksav Kabbalah. I spoke to a very popular sofer. What? Vaad, it's the name of an organization. It's the name of an organization called Vaad Mishmeres Stam. No, writing, they don't care for writing. That's you can see. Writing is a matter of the buyer. Buyer will look at the ksav. They can see if you know what you if it says Shema Yisrael, or it says Asher Yoshev Esecha.
The buyer doesn't know that. If you formulate the letters correctly.
Well, that's what the Kabbalah is. The Kabbalah means you know the halachas. You know the halachas. They'll test you. They have no requirement to see your work. That's not necessary because the work stands for itself. If you know the halachas, if you can't get the ink onto the page in a nice form,
doesn't know anything about anything.
We don't assume the buyer is so ignorant where you can pass off. A person who has Kabbalah means he's a Talmud Chacham, he's a Yerush Shemayim. You're not going to go sell someone the newspaper, the New York Times. You're not going to make a clip again, put that in a mezuzah. We assume you're going to do. So today, I spoke to a sofer, Rabbi Schertzer. He's on he's a very good. So I asked him, I was once buying him, so he says, do you carry, I asked him about the mezuzos. It used to be years ago he would sell schoira from seifrim that did not have Kabbalah. I know that as a he has a lot of, you want to buy a mezuzah, I have a price range from $18 to $200. Because he's a wholesaler. He's a wholesaler. So Soifer from Eretz Yisrael, from America, they bring him their schoira and he sells it. He sells it wholesale. So he used to have a schoira from people who were Talmidei Chachamim, and to supplement their income, they would write tefillin and mezuzah and he would sell it. And these people, very surprisingly, did not have Kabbalah. They did not have, and there's no, it's not like Shechita. Shechita, there's a discussion of Shlomo Kluger, the Ramah. If you don't have Kabbalah, you're not allowed to eat from the meat, according to one opinion. But there is no such thing as, if you don't have Kabbalah, you're not allowed to write a tefillin and mezuzah. So he would sell schar for people that did not have Kabbalah. So he told me recently that he no longer carries. Today, the industry already has been so tight, and the standards today are so high, he does not sell, will not sell to customers tefillin and mezuzos that come from a sefer that have not taken the exams. That today is the standard in society today, where, I mean, you probably for sure can find sefer today out there in the market where people are writing tefillin and mezuzos and don't have Kabbalah, but the good sefer today will not touch from sefer that do not have that. By the way, Kabbalah is very strict today. The Kabbalah today by Safra is even stricter than Shechita. You have to go for recertification. It expires every 3 years, if I remember correctly. The Kabbalah you get for Vad Mishmeres Stam expires every 3 years, and you have to go back and take the exams all over again to make sure you're fresh. Shechita, as far as I know, never expires. Shechita, you get a Kabbalah on Shechita, you're done for life. You can forget everything it says in Yeridaya, and you can continue shachting, but not safras. Safras, you gotta go for research, and it's a very big mile, it's a very big hiddur. You know, you get a piritz full and should be reading Kiddas Suchadin. The standards today are very high in the world of safras.
They had now an article last year that had a big thing about there was some women that wrote Sefer Torah.
Wow, still right. Women.
Last week I saw that.
So that what is the halacha? Is it really the whole shayla for women rights?
You don't know if it's women. Obviously, the problem is that the woman that was doing it, obviously, she got it from late.
Obviously.
So that's the problem right there.
Kesuba.
No, ksuba is a piece of paper. It's nothing. Ksuba is not a real document.
A woman can
buy an akhla, you fill in the blank.
Can a woman fill out the ksuba?
You fill in the blank.
Of course. That's for sure. Can the woman even actually go in and be the Masada Kedushin? Probably, yeah.
Megillas Esther?
I don't know.
What?
No, Megillah says the woman can't write. It's anything that's Ksiva Stam. Anything that's
It's a Geret, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't matter. It has all the same rules.
Anyway, last week I saw this, the Palestinians have workshops with computers that write Sifrei Torah.
There's a museum. I saw some video once online. They show in this location. They show a real cipher sitting at a table writing a real Sifrei Torah. And next to them is a computer, a robot, writing a Sifrei Torah. And it's, you know, like a robot. Perfect. The computer is puzzle, and the person, of course. What? You don't have to go to mikvah to write. You only have to go to mikvah to write the Shem Hashem. You know, as I mentioned, just to show you, the standards. Someone's told me a story just to show you how high the standards are today in Safras. You do not have to go to mikvah before you write a Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and a Mezuzah. You only have to go to mikvah before you write the Shem Hashem. So some sefer used to be something that in the Tefillin and Mezuzah, you're not allowed to write out of order. If you write one letter out of order, it's possible. But in the Sefer Torah, if you write out of order, it's fine. So there were sefer years ago that would write, they would leave out Hashem's name, and then they would go to mikvah, and then in one shot they would write Lashem, Kedushas Hashem, and they would write 50 shemos in one shot.
Okay,
yeah, that was that easy. So someone recently told me that it was a sefer, but today all the seifrim, the people who do this as a, for their profession, they don't do that. The standard today, even though it's not required, is they go to mikvah. They go to mikvah before they touch anything on the tefillin and mezuzahs. So there was a younger man who was a professional seifer, and he forgot to go to mikvah. He woke up in the morning, he forgot to go to mikvah, and he started writing, and he didn't end up writing Asher. He wrote a few lines, and then he remembered, I didn't go to mikvah. So he went to mikvah, whatever. Then it came time to sell the Sefer Torah, and he remembered there was one time, a couple of lines, he did not go to mikvah. So he asked, if I'm not mistaken, it was either Rabbi Yashu or Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Arbach, do I have to tell the buyer that I did not go to mikvah? There were a couple of lines written by me, and I did not go to mikvah when I wrote these lines. It's not required according to halacha, and years ago it was definitely not done. In Europe it was not done, because they didn't have mikvos, it was very cold, and it was not practical to go to mikvah. So either Rav Yashiv or Rav Shlomo Zalman told him that since today the standards are so high, and everyone today, all of the people who are writing, all of the Bnei Torah who are writing, they go to mikvah for the entire thing from beginning to end. You should tell the buyer. You should inform him. It's 100% kosher. But the standards say are such high, that's what's expected. And you should just let him know. And if he has a hakpada, he has a hakpada. If not, not.
Well, look, what?
But you have to go erase a few lines.
It doesn't look nice.
You have to write a whole new urea. A whole urea is a week's work. You have to go. It's not the same. Once you erase it, once you have to cut it, it's not the same.
That's thinner.
So look, you know, for example, you go to Achnosat Sefer Torah. It's very, very sad. You know, you have a sefer who spends 6 months to a year writing a Sefer Torah, and they have just the three lines left to write, and the outlines, and then they decide anyone who wants can write a letter, can put some ink. So most people, they don't go to mikvah. They don't go to mikvah, and they just come. And so if we have here, you work so hard to write a Sefer Torah, b'tahara, And then the last three lines, every guy just comes up and puts a little dot. It depends where. It depends. That's the place. It all depends. I've been to a number of these. Sometimes you write the very mak, but you don't. No one writes anything. The sefer writes, and you just hold them. Maybe the rav, the person who paid for it. Maybe they get to put a few dots. But so I've been to places where it's a free for all. It's not a free for all. No, I want to write. I even saw a place where a person who was a Mechal Shabbos insisted that he put a dot, and they let him. And then someone later made a macha. How dare you let a person Mechal Shabbos? He's passed the whole Sefer Torah. And they went. They asked four poskim, and they all told them putting a dot in a letter that's outlined. No shape or form passes the Sefer Torah. And also, exactly, the notion. Also, the person was not really a Mechal Shabbos. He was an Imam Mutter. He was a doctor. It's not really, there are many reasons. So they all pass in the same. But Ad Kedei Kach, someone who was a Mechal Shabbos, someone who was suspect, was writing in the Sefer Torah, and someone made a Macha, and they had to go ask a Shaila. It had to be done in a very political way. No one should get insulted. So you see what goes on. You see, it's a total Hefgevelt. People are, and it's a shame, because the Sefer Torah, you're paying the Sefer Torah $50,000 sometimes, and the person who writes it is a poor Talmud Chacham, was a Yoresh Shemayim, and this is his work, his art, his work, his, and you let the last few lines, you just mess it all up. It's not a nice thing. You know, the last thing, you should be very careful at the very end. Hachnas Sefer Torah should be done b'oifen muhudar. But the standards are very high. So here, we just want to point out that today, this is a development of shechita that has come into existence in the last few hundred years, and only in very recent modern times has this concept of having Ksav Kabbalah for Safros entered into the world, only probably in the last 50 years, and very quickly has the standards increased to a point where you have to have Kabbalah and recertification.
Do you have to get certified for, let's say, a Sfarli Sefer Torah separately?
No, I don't think so. It's just the halachas. The halachas are identical.
The halachos are not exactly
right. The level there, so it depends. If you're writing Sav Arik, Sav Beis, Vilish, so that is something which you trust.
Kabbalah came out because there was a lot of
Hafkeros.
Phony baloney stuff.
Yeah. There still is a lot of baloney stuff. And there was computers.
Came out.
There was also with computers.
Driven.
Yeah. You want standards. There has to be industry standards, and that has to be monitored by a VAD, by an organization. The big thing, you know what happened? The big thing, you spoke about this, Rabbi Michaels, and we had also Rabbi Cohn. Remember, Rabbi Cohn was here last year. We have to get them back to come back again. But the big thing was when the technology to check the Sefer Torah by computers came out. So the Vad Mishmer Estam said, "Wait a minute, we're in charge here. We're in charge. We're the ones who give Kabbalah. So the only ones that can purchase software, we want a monopoly on the software. No one's allowed to sell software."
For checking
Sefer Torah, except for us, and we want to use technology where anything that is checked will automatically be recorded in our system. So we have control over everything that's going on in the world with regard to Safras. So they try to do this, and then people say, you know, it's not fair. It's a free world. It's a free country. It's a free world, and there's money to be made. There's money to be made, and therefore you have to spread the wealth. So there was a Din Torah, and the Vad Mishmer Estam lost the Din Torah. More of two. He had three. He showed us three, but it's more. And once that already definitely it took away from their koyach, their power, their control. They're an organization. They have the backing of some of the biggest paiskim. The biggest paiskim. Wozner was very involved with the Vad Mishmer Estam. They have the backing of from the people
who... Which of Shevet Halevi?
Shevet Halevi. There are people who wanted, for very good reasons, to increase the standards of Stam. Sifrei Torah Mezuzos. And it's done with very good intent. But you know, there's also a lot of money involved. There's a lot of money involved in anything which it's a billion-dollar industry. Safras.
Did they ever find that the software made mistakes?
There are different types of software. There are three different. Rabbi Michaels explained to us there are three different popular programs on the market. Each one has advantages. Each one has advantages, and software. Yeah, the software can make mistakes. It's not. It's not.
What it does is it shows you. Just
right. He showed. He demonstrated. It basically shows you every single aleph. The software that he used, he showed us. He used one of the popular products in the market. What that software does, you have to first scan in the entire Sefer Torah. And then it checks the spelling. It checks. There's a lot of things that it does. But at the end of the day, what it does is, it on its own determines as letter Aleph. Let's go to the letter Aleph. How many Alephs are there in the Sefer Torah? Let's say there are 50,000 Alephs. I'm just making up a number. There are 50,000 Alephs. So this computer can basically, you put on the settings where 49,000 of them are for sure kosher. The computer can figure out that it's just so clear that it's kosher, don't bother. But there are 1,000 olives, a little different. No, it doesn't fit the pattern perfectly. So those olives it presents, here are 1,000 olives collected from the entire Sefer Torah. You, the Sefer, have to determine to make just to look them over, make sure it's the 100%. You could adjust the settings accordingly. You know, you can adjust the settings. He demonstrated exactly the sensitivity. He adjusted, and that's only one program. There are other programs that are there. Three major programs that are popular today among Seferim to check Tefillin and Mezuzos. And I mean, it's very important. The statistics are that a Sefer makes about 300 mistakes.
300.
Wait, is that correct? Yeah. Maybe 30 mistakes? Oh, wait, I'm sorry, 30 mistakes. I'm forgetting. When he writes the Sefer Torah.
300 is a lot.
No, I'm sorry, 30 mistakes. I'm adding, it's a big difference. I think maybe 30 mistakes? I think 30 mistakes. I don't remember.
Oh,
it came from the ticket.
I have it at home. I have it.
They say if you take out an old Sefer Torah.
Yes.
If you take out an old Sefer Torah that was not checked by computer, you only have the statistics are 18% chance that it's kosher. Spelling mistakes. Go to a shul that has an aron full of old Sefer Torah. whole Aaron. Chances are only 18% chance that Sefer Torah does not have a spelling mistake. That's the statistics. I think Rav Wozniak, he would not make a bracha on a Sefer Torah that was not checked by computer. He held that if you're not checking, you're not la halacha. He held bezmana zed, there's no chazaka anymore. Bezmana zed. On a new one also. That's what they say, right? A rose no held that you're not allowed to make a bracha. Not to, you have to have it checked. You have to have it checked three times. You have to, without a computer. You have to have someone read through it. You have to have someone read through it.
Did you tell us last year that in one of the Assyrian or whatever it is, books, I know the Aleppo Codex, it mentions, I don't know if you mentioned it, that they had the shul that was over there, about Torre's job was to check
right.
The safer.
In the Spanish Portuguese synagogue.
$5 fine. That Shabbos in the laning, he was fined $5 from his salary.
$5, a lot of money. If they found the psul in the Sefer Torah, every week you have to check over the parsha for that week.
Most of the scoring in Aleppo did not match the Sefer Torah.
It's very expensive to check by computers. It's $1,000 Sefer Torah to check by computers. It's at least $1,000. It's a lot of work. You have to photocopy, scan an entire thing, then you have to sit for a couple of hours.
For a new one, you should do it.
You must do it. And you'll know what the problem is. The problem is, he explained to us, is that what do they do? They write a whole Sefer Torah. This is the Shemazelkite of America, from all over the world. You have a new Sefer Torah. Right? So you're scanning the whole Sefer Torah. You're always going to find mistakes. That's the way it goes. No one's perfect. So let's say you'll find 10 mistakes. Fine. So the computer, here are the 10 spelling mistakes. Here. Go fix it. So many times they give it to the cipher, not necessarily the one who wrote it. They give it to another cipher to fix the 10 spelling mistakes. And he doesn't do it. He fixed only 9 of the 10. You make the corrections, right? Who's watching you? Okay, this correction. There's one more that you left out. Just because you this is a very sad thing. You think it's checked by computer, and you think you're all done. Yeah, you think you're all done. Make sure after it was checked by computer, the surfer was supposed to correct it. He corrected all of the mistakes that were meant to be corrected. Some people, they check it with the computer a second time after it's checked the first time to really make sure that the surfer corrected all the mistakes that were made.
Before they had this technology, I was watching years in the 60s, somebody checked, a surfer checked and saved the Torah, and he was being gullible so fast, and he had paper clips, I guess he was miopic for it. And every time he would see something he didn't like, and it was just lying.
They put a marker in the margin.
And then later he went back.
And they took it in one shot.
What happened before the computer? Everybody used to
make a mistake in Hashem's name. It's all over.
They found. He claimed that they found even a sefer that was used from the Gedolei Yisrael from years ago. We know for a fact there's certain sefer Torah that a bracha was made upon them by some of the biggest Gedolei Yisrael. We know for a fact they were spelling mistakes in the Sefer Torah.
No choice.
Absolutely, 100%. But Bizman Hazel, we have the computer, there's no excuse. Okay, you're right.
So, Rav Bosa, why doesn't Paskin, one is obligated to check through a computer? And what happened before it came out?
Because since today we have the means. Today it's easily available. It's easy. You just check the computer.
Rav Bosa, Paskin's like that?
Or one is just,
I don't know. That's what it seems, yeah.
If Rav Bosa was one of the bad Tomchen, then there's a very shyla about him being a gay.
He doesn't get a penny out of this. Assuming.
I don't know.
All right.
He doesn't get a penny. It doesn't say that bribery has.
Okay, he was from the big Paiskin.
At least the 80s. There was no such thing.
Right.
So
that's a big thing. You have three cipher that look it over well, can correct every mistake. There's no excuse. Three cipher, three people independently read it from beginning to end, who are trained to read it.
They read it from backwards. Forward.
They don't do it the real way. It's like we daven. We just zip up the davening. That's not the way you're supposed to daven. You're supposed to do it the real way. Someone told me in the halacha lemaisa, even with the computer, you still mechuyav halacha to have it checked by a person. And Eretz Yisrael, there are people, that's the profession. Their profession is, they make good money, they read through an entire Sefer Torah and they find mistakes. Because the computer does not take away, in Shulchan Aruch, you have to, if you don't have a computer, you have to have it read by three people. If you have it with the computer, the person can say, yeah, in Shulchan Aruch, you only have to have it checked by one person. So the computer does not take away the requirement of having one person read the Sefer Torah from beginning to end. And Eretz Yisrael, there are new Sefer Torah being written every single day, and there are people, professionals, that do this. And someone told me he saw someone do this, he couldn't believe it because of his own eyes, he saw the guy is a genius. He reads it, he goes through it so fast, and he gets every mistake. He chaps. He knows, like, how could a person know there are over 300,000 letters in the Sefer Torah? He knows the Torah inside out. He's able to chap. He goes.
Uses the same ticket, so he
not every. It's true. It's standardized. Today it's standardized.
So many things. So yeah, it is amazing.
But it's amazing. This is his profession, and he told me the first thing he described. He says there are different magi, different levels. There are people that get that are bigger experts. They demand more money. They get like. I think some get $300 for a Sefer Torah, $400, $500.
It
depends on the person. Some of them go very quick. I don't know.
Do it in one day?
I don't know. Depends. It's a lot of work. It's a hard work. You go out of your mind. I can go out of my mind.
Most of them don't work a full day doing it. It's too hard to do it.
But like, that's what he said, right? Sure, right? Cohen said today that the industry has become so... There's so much pressure. They make very little money. It's very difficult parnasa. There's so much pressure. He said that the seifim today, they don't even do the tagim. They just write the letters. It's not profitable. To write tagim is a lot of work. You write the letter, and then you have to make all the tagim. A Zion, a Shri tagim, this tagim. The seifim can write much faster, can make a lot more, has a beautiful script, a beautiful handwriting. He can write a lot more. He can write 10 mezuzahs without tagim, or write 5 mezuzahs with tagim. You don't need skill to make a talk. You can give tagim. You can give to a child, not a child, but you give it to tagim to a person that's not very skilled. It's much more profitable for a sefer to write a sefer Torah without tagim, and then give it over and pay someone minimum wage to write all to do all the tagim. So it's become specialized. I just write the letters, he'll do the tagging, someone else will do the checking, and someone else will do this, someone else will do that. It's like an assembly line, and you maximize your labor to increase your profits. Or you minimize your labor to increase your profits. Alright, let's just, we're out of time already. Let's just begin just a little bit. We're going to have to stop in the middle of this. So I want us to get off to the beginning of this topic. Just a little beginning. Achilois, Avelus al Ishtoi v'Yerushasa kishekvar hichlet legarsha. Spooky case, bizarre situation. A person already in his mind has decided he's going to divorce his wife. He's going to divorce his wife, and then she dies. So is he required to sit shiva for his wife? Harashbam kosav l'uman mimashav besugin mishnosan and mishnosan ein v'l'garsha shuv ein l'baal peros. This was a discussion about a date. If you have a date in a predated shtar, is a predated get, and the person has a get, and the get was written in advance, and he delivers the get later than the date written in the get, is this problematic? So the Gemara says possibly it is, because. If we assume that she loses her ksuba from the date that's written in the get, she's going to lose the ksuba earlier than when she was actually divorced. If a man divorces his wife a month after he writes the get, and she comes to court and says, I was entitled for sustenance to receive Parnasa until I was divorced, he says, no, look at the date of the get. The date of the get was a month before. You already lose your right to receive sustenance for me to support you from the date written.
The other way around, because you're going to retire for Kukus, the world.
Okay, let's say there are no lukuch. I don't know the details. Let's not go into too many details. It's not going to get important details. The point over here is that a date that's predated may possibly be problematic because of the date. And the Gemara says, no, it's not a problem, because the moment the husband instructs the sofer to write the get, already from that moment in time, she's already to some degree considered partially divorced, and she no longer gets mizonos. She no longer can get all these halachas. So what do we learn from here? We learn from here a very unique concept, that when a man already makes a decision, a conscious decision, that he's going to divorce his wife, and he begins to put the process in motion, even though he has not yet actually given the get, there are consequences in halacha. there are consequences that no longer is he obligated to support her, or no longer does he get her. Does he yarshen her? Does he yarshen her? What?
But he can still change his mind.
He can still change his mind, but until he changes his mind, and he does something to show that he's changed his mind, already
he's not allowed to live with her.
Besides, that's the Dvarim Shel Yisum, even Dvarim Shel Mamon. There are halachic consequences once a person has done an action to indicate that he's planning to divorce his wife. So here we want to ask a question that's not discussed in the Gemara. What happens if his wife dies? Does he have an obligation to mourn, to sit Shiva? He already has done a legal action by asking a sofer to write a get, or deciding to do something. So how does that play out when it comes to rules of avils? Let's see. Harashbam glosam lelamim mimashon b'sugim. Nishenosan ein of legarsha shuv ein lebal peiros. The husband does not receive the income from her assets. Once her field produces, she has assets, and the field produces fruit, the husband no longer is entitled to receive the benefits from that, her assets, once he decides to divorce her. Shabal, Shoyle Ketata, Mishtai, Uvidaitai. Now here the Rashbam says he was his kavon, he did not do something legal. He just made a conscious decision, Lagarsha, Imesa, Eino Yarsha, he does not inherit her assets. Ulam, Lahalokas Rama, Beshuva, Kvarnitchu Divir Rashbam, the Rama writes that the Rashbam's words are not accepted lahalacha. The Yachid who besfarzo, the Rashbam is a Yachid, he's an individual, behavior Shaharif, Harosh, Fatisvis, Cholkim, Allah disagree, Ubir, Shemitam, Zegam, Machab Shulchanor, Hishma Divir Rashbam, the Machab omits the words of the Rashbam, Ibn Shabal, Yoyresh, Es Ishtai Acha Yigar Shena. If a husband decides, he tells everyone, he already hired a lawyer. He hired a lawyer, I'm going to divorce my wife, but did not actually give the get to his wife. If the wife dies, he's still entitled to inherit her assets. Not like the Rashbam.
Support her.
That for sure. He has to for sure support her, for sure. Now, let's go a step further. A person was fighting with his wife. It was clear as day that he was going to divorce her. They were already in court. Yishev olav yeshev oleha shivas yimei avelos. So Yam Shel Shlema, Rav Shlema Kluge Paskin, he does not sit Shiva. They already, it's public knowledge that they are getting divorced. That's what he Paskin. Public knowledge.
And legally.
Legally. They did not get divorced through a get. He did not yet give her the get, but they were separated. This was an Aguna Shaila. Rachmana Litzlan, right? Let's say it's an Aguna Shaila. What more do you want than that? An Aguna child, an Aguna case. It's in the news. They're marching. What? Okay, but they're already marching in front of his guy's house. Give a get. Okay, so the guy over here, they're not living with him, then they're out. And then she dies. Does he? So he passes, you don't sit Shiva. Where do you get this from? The Rashbam. Even though we don't accept the Rashbam lehalacha benogea inheriting her assets, we don't accept the Rashbam, but we at least accept the Rashbam with regard to the laws of Avelos. So according to the Rashbam, even when it comes to mamoin, we take away his money. It's only midrabanan, so certainly does not sit shiva. We do not paskin like the Rashbam, since he has a schus to have the peros, we can't take away his money unless he does a ma'is of a get. She's my wife. Kulin Avelos, if the husband is not entitled to eat the produce of her assets, so certainly when it comes to Din Dirabon of Avelos, Viavapir Shechacham Cholkim Valachacham, Chamoysam, Mikol Mokim Halachim Ekobe Avel, even when maybe when it comes to Mamon, we don't paskin like Rabbi Shimon, he still gets her peros, but when it comes to Avelos, Halacha Kedivrei Hanekel Be Avel, and therefore a husband does not sit shir for a wife that he is separated from. In Kain Halacha Shimon Lein Avelos, amazing Chiddush. What's the law lumnus? The lumnus is you can't make a person mourn what he doesn't want to mourn for. Mourning is davar that's in the heart. To mourn is something which is personal. The ein loy mar lefanav. A man's wife, he hates his wife, he wants to get divorced.
It doesn't
matter. He's saying that's what we just said from the Rashbam. It's saying it's only the Rabbanon, and we have the Rashbam, and he's giving the lumnus. The lumnus over here is a person who is not in a state of mourning, doesn't care.
He tells you.
I
don't feel anything bad.
Can you feel anything bad?
Yeah, but I don't
feel anything bad. It doesn't matter. Even when it comes to a relative, one of the other relatives, a blood relative, you can hate the person's guts. You can hate that relative with a sinas maves. It doesn't matter. If they're your flesh and blood, you have no choice. You have to mourn. But a wife, a spouse, it's not a blood relationship. It's a business relationship. And therefore, you can sever the relationship, and therefore you can't force a person to mourn.
Even when you have a blood relative,
yeah.
You can say, I'll do a velus with the rice and not the rabbanon.
No, he's saying you can't do that. He doesn't agree with you. You have to have velus midrabban. Let's finish. The sidur of kosaf hinei tomorrow amal kocha. Okay, he writes here. This is a shock. Such a chiddush that you don't. What was that? Well, this. Wait, quick question. Quick question. Yeah. What name? Name of who? Yam Shel Shlomo of Shlomo Kluger. Kluger.
That's the Mashal.
Okay, I don't know then. I don't know the name. I do not know the answer. Let's go further. The cause of li zoki necha vechacham mufla shechachme yushlaim iskimu lo lekal vechemesh shedananti midivrei harashbam. So he's saying the Yam Shel Shlomo here is saying that I told people this chiddush that you don't sit shir for a wife that you're separated from, and people said to me, you don't know what you're talking about. Doesn't make one bit of sense. I sent a letter to the Gedolei Yisrael in Yerushalayim, and they said that I'm right. I'm right, and therefore you should know that I'm right. Ki yetz bize pasach Yeshuas Yaakov bin Yachel shekibul gzuntayt shekibul ha-Torah mimei rabbanim ziko gel liishtoi. He gave his ziko gel liishtoi b'entayi meso lov ishtoi. The wife died in tzorech. Now he did over here shekibul ha-Torah mimei rabbanim ziko gel liishtoi. So he did over here hetem mei rabbanim. Okay, this is called the hetem mei rabbanim. His wife did not want to accept the get, so what did he do? 100 rabbanim said, you can marry another woman, but notice these are very powerful words here. Just because 100 rabbis tell you can marry a second wife, does not allow you to marry a second wife unless you also give the get to your first wife. The problem is, she does not want to accept it. This is something which has been abused in this generation, this day and age. Hetem mei rabbanim traditionally was only done when the husband gave the get. The wife doesn't want to accept it. So I'm going to give the get to a Beis Din. I'm giving the get to a Beis Din. She doesn't want to take it? That's her problem. Oh, but I'm not divorced. Since she refused to take it, I'm not divorced. Because Bizmana said you can't divorce your wife against her will. She must accept the get. Until she has to accept, she doesn't want to accept. If you get a hetem mei rabbanim after you give a get, then you can get married. Today, unfortunately, there are people that are getting a hetem mei rabbanim to get a second wife, and they don't give the get. And that is a very great abuse. An enormous abuse of the rule of hetem mei rabbanim. It's done. For money, anything. So what?
Instead of a get.
What? It's no, no, you give a get. No, but people today are, yeah, in order to, for a man to marry more than one wife, bisman hazeh, you need to do two things. You need to give a get and hetemei rabbanim. The wife doesn't want to accept it, that's her problem. But to go and marry a second wife because 100 rabbanim have given you permission to do so and you have not yet given, I don't want to give the get. I'll give the get when I want. That is untraditional. And today, people are doing this, and people are coming out and saying...
That's a big, hot issue.
Hot issue.
Yeah. Who are the rabbinim who sign?
People who are paid off to sign.
Which
are you serious?
You have one big rav, you have one...
It's the other way around. I mean, the man that didn't want to give...
What?
Who was an aguna. I mean, just, it's 2 years now.
Yeah.
Somebody in Flatbush
here... Yeah.
...was given a hetemei rabbanim for the woman who the husband didn't want to give again. They used the hetemei rabbanim...
A woman? No, no such thing.
Yeah, they did. I know who it was.
A woman can remarry without a get?
Yeah, I'm telling you, it happened. They went to get, and I'll tell you who did it.
That's not Afkinu Rabbanu. But you don't have, you don't need a Nei Rabbanu to Afkinu. There's no such thing as Afkinu. Afkinu, you need one diet. One godl will tell you Afkinu. Rabbi Belsky used to want to do this sometimes. They didn't let him.
This is what they call it.
Afkinu Rabbanu. It's not Hetemei
Rabbanim.
Okay, it's another time. Not for now. Another time. Piyotze b'zeh posak ha'yeshuas Yaakov b'nilin echad shekibu l'atarim m'imei Rabbanim v'zichim gen lishtar b'min. So that's those words over there. I just want to point those words. Hetemei mutzikui. Certainly you don't need to go to Mimavel in this case when he already gave the get and just didn't take it. So he disagrees. However, he held that he did have to mourn for Ulam, the base mayor, Cholak Alamashal, the Sim Devar, because of the Lemilesi, Laharach, Shakahara Zokinze, Shakona, Chokma Yisera, Lulu, Shakosav, Sharam, Tomu Bipsak. So basically, like everything else, it's Machlaikis. Okay, we'll stop over here, take a very short break.
I think I was not like this.